There's a good chance if you are listening to this podcast, you are on your commute. You're waiting for the bus, and in the meantime, a parade of vehicles are idling behind a red light. And as you take a deep breath, you feel the warm plume of exhaust on your face. Kind of seems like a no-brainer to say that that is probably not good for your health. But what if these tiny particles in the fumes could be leading to dementia? Well, it's the small things that can make a big difference. And on this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are talking very small. In fact, nano, to be precise. Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we find the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we ask them to weigh in on the big questions. And this week, it's a doozy. Can exhaust fumes cause dementia?
This is opening a whole wide range of fundamental questions we want really to answer today before tomorrow.
That's Imad Ahmed, a postdoctoral research fellow in experimental geochemistry in the Department of Earth Sciences at the University of Oxford. We met outside the Carfax Tower in Oxford, accompanied by all of the buses and cars you could handle. The link between dementia or Alzheimer's and exhaust fumes hinges on very tiny magnetite nanoparticles. And when I say tiny, I mean incredibly small.
So a nanoparticle is, means 10 to the minus 9 of a meter. So if we have a cross-section of a human hair, if I say the particle is about 10 nanometer, then we can actually align something around 10,000 to 20,000 of these nanoparticles on across the human hair.
As the name may indicate, magnetite has an easily measured magnetic fingerprint. It can be found, yes, in traffic, but it can also come from open fires, industrial works. It's even in printer toner. But because of its magnetic properties, even if it's in a really small quantity, researchers are able to detect it and work out how much is in, say, airborne pollution. Now, before I get too far into this podcast, there is one other person I think you should meet.
Professor Barbara Maher, Lancaster Environment Centre, the University of Lancaster.
Barbara was the lead researcher and worked with Imad on this study. Usually, when we talk about pollution, we tend to think about our lungs. But Barbara was curious about whether or not we would find these magnetite nanoparticles on the brain.
We didn't have any funding for this work at all. So it was purely one of those stories where persistence is required to actually, you know, keep on getting access to the analytical facilities that you needed.
Oddly enough, the team's research into these magnetites got a jumpstart because of the BBC television program, Trust Me, I'm a Doctor. For the show, they took 8 identical terraced houses next to the busy A6 in Lancaster. In front of 4 of them, they planted silver birch trees. The other 4 were left untouched. Then they looked at what kinds of pollution particles made it into the houses.
And what we found is that most of these fine particles, really small particles, they constitute of about more than 55% of iron in their structure, which means that they are actually magnetic, they are fine, which means they are biologically reactive.
And it was actually writing up that paper, you know, we were using the magnetite again to understand how much pollution there was and how much we were taking out with the roadside trees, that I was thinking just maybe it's this nanoscale magnetite that is a real culprit in terms of human health problems.
Next came the task of actually getting brain samples to look at. Barbara, Imad, and the team of dedicated researchers managed to secure 37 different brain samples from Manchester and Mexico.
This is analytically difficult work. You know, firstly, to get hold of human brain samples is not straightforward. You know, to get access and permission to use human brain samples is not something that you do every day.
And then once they had their brain samples, They had to beg and bargain to get time and facilities where they could actually get their hands on a transmission electron microscope to look at the nanoparticles. Shout out to the University of Glasgow's physics department on that one.
At the end of the day, it was a hypothesis we wanted to test. The magnetite has been detected in human brain long time ago, more than 25 years ago. And these are naturally occurring magnetites, which our body actually, because of the iron in the blood and the process that take place, they can actually form and they can reach the brain. Now, our hypothesis was, what if there is a substantial source of these magnetites that actually reach our brain just because of inhalation of pollution?
So, what exactly were they looking for? Well, there are two types of magnetites that they found in the brain. There are the natural existing magnetite nanoparticles that have edges and corners. They kind of look like a two-year-old's attempt at drawing a rectangle. And then you have the other ones, the ones created from pollution. They have a completely different shape. They are eerily spherical. Imad says that that points directly to the combustion of fossil fuels.
In this image here, we are actually comparing the particles that we discovered with particles that are being collected from a busy road in Lancaster. And you can actually see the similarity between the two. The particles are spherical, tiny, in terms of the size range is almost the same, telling us they are actually coming from exactly the same kind of source.
And there were a lot of them. For every one of the natural magnetite nanoparticles that they found on the brain, they found about 100 spherical toxic nanoparticles.
We were astonished, actually, to see, first, to find them. Number two, to find a lot of them.
And then there's the matter of where they found them. These particles seem to gather on the frontal cortex. That's the part of the brain that is responsible for our language, our memory, our consciousness. There has been a long-established link with how naturally occurring magnetite particles are tied to dementia and Alzheimer's. So, after 7 years of their work analyzing their brain samples, the thought from Imad and Barbara is that these spherical, man-made, toxic nanoparticles could have a similar effect on the brain.
After we did the experiment, we came back to our source and we asked about the history. And we knew at the end of the study who have Alzheimer and who doesn't have. There is a sort of correlation, but it's not a strong correlation and we can't rely on it yet. But I guess the future work is to expand the study, involve many, many more samples and try to establish this kind of correlation.
And not to freak you out, but these nanoparticles have a direct route in. There's no blood-brain barrier around our nasal cavity, so it's a straight shot from our nose to our frontal cortex.
Masks will not help much, I have to warn you, because these are very, very fine particles. I think our study, what we are saying is that we should be concerned, we should worry about that, and there has to be some legislations to reduce the emission of these pollutants from vehicles.
At least 8 UK cities break the World Health Organization's air pollution guidelines. That includes London, Birmingham, and Leeds. And while there's a lot of talk by governments over clean air strategies, Imad says there are steps that we can take right now, looking at how we design cities that can reduce the impact of these magnetite nanoparticles.
For example, our previous study is actually suggesting simply that if you have birch trees planted in front of your windows, basically these trees will capture a lot of these very toxic nanoparticles. Also, in terms of the design, of course, the speed humps is a bad idea. We have to find some modern solution for speed limits because they are a source of pollution. So these kind of, there are little things needed really to try to reduce the pollution in the, at least in the urban areas where people live. That way we can actually protect Well, maybe not completely, but reduce the impact of these toxic nanoparticles.
Imad and Barbara hope that their research will get in the hands of urban planners and policymakers, but that is jumping ahead. Right now, they need to do more studies, and they need more funding to do those studies so they can build on their research.
We stand on the threshold of carrying out more work now to understand how significant these particles are in the human brain. I mean, they shouldn't be there. There's millions of them. They're known to consist of a material that's toxic to the brain. Now what we have to do is to design the most incisive studies to interrogate what role they're playing in human health. So it's a sense of achievement having got to this point. But we're just standing at the doorway, and now we need to go on and do this other work in as comprehensive a way as possible and as soon as possible.
And while the road ahead may seem a bit daunting, you have to remember, hey, it is not every day that you make a discovery like this.
We were so happy and excited to first to see the data and then to publish the work. Absolutely, we are over the moon.
That's it for this episode, and a special thanks to all of the researchers involved in this work. Dr. Imad Ahmed from the University of Oxford, Professor Barbara Marr, Dr. Penelope Folds, Professor David Aslob, and Dr. Vasil Kolakovsky from the University of Lancaster. Don't worry, there's more. Thank you to Dr. Donald McLaren from the University of Glasgow, Professor David Mann from the University of Manchester, Dr. Ricardo Torres Jardin from the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, and Dr. Lillian Calder Garcudinas from the University of Montana and the Universidad de Val de México. Phew, that was a lot of names. Okay, music for this podcast was made by John Lyons. And please, please, please tell us what you think of this podcast. You can go to Twitter. You can tweet us at Oxford Sparks. Find us on Facebook. And of course, there's a lot of cool stuff that we do on the website. Go to oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. I'm Emily Elias. And until next time on the podcast, when we ask, can fizzy drinks cure cancer? Bye for now.